Hello, and welcome to your OCR A-Level Psychology Study Podcast. I'm your tutor for today, and we're diving deep into one of the most fascinating and important core studies in the social area, Pilyavin, Rodin, and Pilyavin's 1969 study of bystander behavior on the New York City subway. Whether you're revising for your AS paper or preparing for the full A-Level, this episode will take you through everything you need to know. The study itself, the theory behind it, the key statistics examiners love to see, and the exam technique to turn your knowledge into top marks. Let's get started. So picture this. It's 1969, New York City. You're on the underground subway train rattling between 59th Street and 125th Street on the IRT 8th Avenue line. The journey takes about 7.5 minutes. Suddenly, a man collapses on the floor of the carriage. What do you do? Do you help? Do you wait for someone else to step in? And does it matter whether the man is carrying a walking cane, suggesting he's ill, or whether he smells of alcohol and appears drunk? These are exactly the questions Pilyavin and colleagues set out to answer, and their answers challenged some of the most widely held assumptions in social psychology at the time. Now let's move into the core concepts. You need to understand this study inside out because it can come up in multiple ways across your OCR exam papers. The background context is crucial. Before Pilyavin, the dominant explanation for why bystanders sometimes fail to help was the diffusion of responsibility hypothesis, developed by Latane and Darley following the famous Kitty Genovese murder in 1964. The idea was simple. The more people present, the less any individual feels personally responsible for helping. Responsibility gets diluted across the group. Pilyavin's study was designed partly to test this hypothesis in a naturalistic setting, and the results were surprising. Let me walk you through the methodology. This was a field experiment, which means it took place in a real-world setting rather than a laboratory. The setting was the New York City subway, specifically a carriage on the IRT 8th Avenue line. The study used a team of four Confederates, people who were part of the research team but pretended to be ordinary passengers. One Confederate played the victim. One acted as a model, someone who would help after a set time delay. Two others were observers who recorded the data. The victim would board the train, stand in the critical area near the doors, and then collapse to the floor approximately 70 seconds into the journey. The observers then recorded whether anyone helped, how quickly they helped, the race and gender of the helpers, and the number of bystanders present. Now, here are the four independent variables, and you must be able to name all four for exam marks. First, victim condition. The victim either carried a black walking cane, suggesting illness, or smelled of alcohol and carried a bottle in a paper bag, suggesting drunkenness. Second, victim race. The Confederate playing the victim was either black or white. Third, model presence. In some trials, a Confederate acting as a model would step in to help either early at around 70 seconds or late at around 150 seconds. Fourth, number of bystanders in the critical area of the carriage. The sample was enormous for a psychology study. Across 103 trials, approximately 4,450 passengers were observed. The sample was naturally occurring, whoever happened to be on the train. Roughly 45% were black and 55% were white. The majority of passengers were male, as the study was conducted on weekdays during commuting hours. Now for the results, and this is where you need to be precise, because examiners specifically reward exact statistics. For the cane condition, the ill victim help was offered in 62 out of 65 trials. That's approximately 95% of trials. For the drunk condition, help was offered in 19 out of 38 trials. That's approximately 50%. This is a massive difference, and it tells us that victim responsibility, whether the person appears to have brought their situation upon themselves, significantly affects helping behavior. What about race? The results here were more complex. There was a slight tendency for same race helping, particularly in the drunk condition. White bystanders were somewhat more likely to help a white drunk victim, and black bystanders were somewhat more likely to help a black drunk victim. However, this effect was less pronounced in the cane condition, where helping rates were high regardless of race. And critically, what about diffusion of responsibility? Pilyavin found no evidence that increasing the number of bystanders reduced helping behavior. In fact, in this enclosed subway environment, help was offered spontaneously and quickly, often within the first 70 seconds. The diffusion of responsibility hypothesis was not supported. So how do we explain these results? This is where the arousal cost-reward model comes in, and this is the theoretical framework you must be able to explain and apply in your exam. The model proposes three stages. First, observing an emergency creates physiological arousal in the bystander, a kind of stress response. Second, the bystander attributes this arousal to the emergency and is motivated to reduce it. Third, the bystander performs a cost-reward analysis. They weigh up the costs of helping, such as effort, time, potential embarrassment, or danger, against the costs of not helping, such as guilt, social disapproval, and the continued discomfort of the arousal itself. The behavior that minimizes overall cost is then chosen. In the Kane condition, the costs of helping were relatively low and the costs of not helping were high, hence the very high helping rate. In the drunk condition, the costs of helping were perceived as higher, more unpredictable, potentially dangerous, so helping rates were lower. Now let's talk about evaluation, because AO3 is worth 35% of your marks, and you need to be able to construct balanced, contextualized arguments, starting with strengths. The most significant strength is ecological validity. Because the study took place on a real subway train with real passengers who had no idea they were part of an experiment, the behavior observed was entirely natural and spontaneous. This gives the findings high mundane realism. They reflect how people actually behave in emergencies, not how they behave when they know they're being watched. Examiners want you to use the phrase high ecological validity and explain why. It's the natural setting, the real participants, the genuine emergency scenario. A second strength is the large and diverse sample. With approximately 4,450 passengers observed across 103 trials, the study has considerable statistical power. The sample included people of different races, ages, and genders, which increases the representativeness of the findings. Now for limitations. The most important limitation for exam purposes is the ethical issues. This was a covert field experiment. Participants had no idea they were being studied. This means there was no informed consent, no right to withdraw, and no opportunity for debriefing. Participants who witnessed the collapse may have experienced genuine distress. Examiners want you to go beyond simply listing these issues. Argue that the ethical costs must be weighed against the benefit of the findings. The study produced insights into altruism and helping behavior that could not have been obtained in a laboratory setting. A second limitation is the lack of control over extraneous variables. Because the subway is a real environment, the researchers could not control who was in the carriage, what other events were happening, or how passengers were feeling that day. This reduces internal validity. We cannot be certain that the independent variables alone cause the differences in helping behavior. A third limitation worth mentioning is cultural and temporal specificity. The study was conducted in New York City in 1969. Social norms, racial dynamics, and attitudes towards public intoxication have changed significantly since then. This limits the extent to which we can generalize the findings to other cultures or time periods. Now, let me give you the exam tips and common mistakes section. This is where marks are won and lost. Common mistake number one, confusing Pilyavin with Latane and Darley. A very common error is to say that Pilyavin found evidence of diffusion of responsibility. This is wrong. Pilyavin's findings challenged diffusion of responsibility. The high rates of spontaneous helping, especially in the Kane condition, directly contradicted the hypothesis. If you write that diffusion of responsibility was supported, you will lose marks. Common mistake number two, getting the statistics wrong. Examiners specifically look for the contrast between 62 out of 65 trials for the Kane condition and 19 out of 38 trials for the drunk condition. Do not say that the Kane condition resulted in 100% helping. It did not. And do not confuse the two conditions. Write the fractions, not just the percentages. Common mistake number three, saying informed consent was obtained. It was not. This was a covert study. Participants did not know they were being observed. Never say consent was given in this study. Common mistake number four, describing the sample as simply passengers without any further detail. Examiners want to see that, you know, the approximate sample size of 4,450, that there were 103 trials, and that the sample was roughly 45% black and 55% white. For 15 mark, to what extent questions, structure your answer by contrasting the social area's situational explanation, the subway environment, the cost-reward analysis, with dispositional factors such as individual personality traits or empathy. Pilyavin's study supports a situational account of helping behavior. The environment, the enclosed carriage, the inability to leave easily, shaped behavior more than individual character. In Section B, when comparing Pilyavin to the contemporary study by Levine et al., focus on the theme of responses to people in need. Both studies examine helping behavior, but Levine uses a cross-cultural approach, examining whether helping rates differ between cities. This allows you to discuss cultural factors that Pilyavin's study does not account for. Now, let's do a quick-fire recall quiz. I'll ask a question, pause the audio, and try to answer before I give you the answer. Question 1. What were the two victim conditions in Pilyavin's study? Pause now. The answer is cane, suggesting illness, and drunk, carrying a bottle in a paper bag. Question 2. In how many trials out of 65 was the cane victim helped? Pause now. The answer is 62, approximately 95%. Question 3. Name the three stages of the arousal. Cost-reward model. Pause now. The answer is, observation of emergency creates arousal. Arousal is attributed to the emergency. A cost-reward analysis determines the response. Question 4. Was diffusion of responsibility supported by Pilyavin's findings? Pause now. The answer is no. It was not supported. High rates of spontaneous helping occurred regardless of the number of bystanders. Question 5. Name two ethical issues with this study. Pause now. The answers include no informed consent, no right to withdraw, no debriefing, potential distress caused to participants. And now for our summary and sign-off. Pilyavin et al., 1969, is a landmark study in social psychology. It challenged the prevailing diffusion of responsibility hypothesis by demonstrating that in an enclosed, naturalistic environment, people are highly likely to help a stranger in need, particularly when the victim appears to be genuinely ill rather than responsible for their own condition. The arousal cost-reward model provides a compelling theoretical framework that explains these findings through the lens of rational cost-benefit analysis rather than moral character. For your exam, remember three things above all. First, know your statistics. 62 out of 65 for cane, 19 out of 38 for drunk. Second, be able to explain and apply the arousal, cost-reward model. Third, evaluate with balance. Acknowledge the high ecological validity while also engaging critically with the ethical issues and the limitations of generalization. You've got this. Good luck in your exams, and I'll see you in the next episode.